Don't forget, coming up this afternoon between 2 and 3, my special guest will be David Goodman. David Goodman, ex-producer of the Sex Pistols, and once told he was the most controversial producer in the music business. We should be chatting with him just after the news, which is next.
West London weather.
Drizzle at times, still. Currently 6 degrees tonight. Well, a little bit drier, but still overcast, becoming misty later on. The overnight temperature we can expect around 2 degrees.
Bernie Simmons.
And the gang and Joanna. It's 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. My special guest this afternoon is David Goodman. He's hailed to be the most controversial producer in the business at the moment. He's with me right now. Hello, David.
Hi, Bernie. Yeah.
Nice to have you with us. Yeah. Let's go back to 1976. How did you first get involved with the Sex Pistols? What were you doing at the time?
Ah, those glorious years of 76. I remember now. I was. At that time, I'd just left the band I'd been in for about 10 years. We were doing the cabaret circuit and that, jazz funk. And I had a company. We was doing a lot of the bands around at the time in the pubs, pub music. And I was sitting at home about, it was a Wednesday night, I think, and I got a phone call from this agency, Album Agency, used to handle a lot of the pub gigs then. And they said, you wouldn't do us a favour, do this young band that's playing at the Nashville tonight. They're very young, they can't really afford much. Would you be prepared to go out for £15? I thought, wow, young band. They said they were called the Sex Pistols. Oh, I thought it was an odd name. All the gear was loaded up in the van, I had nothing better to do. So I trundled on down there. Got there, there was no one there, I was waiting outside. And then this van came round the corner. The door was tied on and there's all these crazy guys hanging out. And I thought, well, I suppose this must be the Sex Pistols. They pulled up, oh, you doing the PA then for us? And, yeah, are you the Sex Pistols? No, no, we ain't the Sex Pistols. We're playing here tonight. They were the 101ers. And at that time in the 101ers was Joe Strummer, who's now in The Clash. I thought, hello, hello, typical Albion rip-off, right? We've been conned into doing this band. We found we've got two bands. Oh, well. So anyway, we got the PA in and did a sound check. And right at the last minute, this other really young band came in at the time. Very strange-looking characters. And the manager, we found out afterwards, sort of just stood in the background. And he said, OK, well, look, let's do a sound check. What's the sound check? This, by the way, was apparently their second ever gig. We checked the sound. All right. And this, the singer, I thought, was a right obnoxious little brat at the time. Actually, I turned out to be quite like the guy. But shouting in the mic and that.
That wouldn't be Johnny, by the way, would it?
Yeah, that's the guy, yeah, with his green teeth. And and anyway, so we got through this sound check. And all they were told by the manager, look, just turn all the amps full up. Let's make some noise. Let's shock these people into some sort of reaction. So anyway, I quite liked what they were doing. It was energetic, it was out of tune and everything, but they had something, and talking to them in the dressing room and that, drinking their Remy Martel, which Mr. McLaren used to give them at every gig. You could see what they were into. Basically, what they were into was, you know, there's these people come to this pub, they don't pay anything to get in, they just sit there, have a few beers, and they could go any night of the week to any pub and hear a band that was playing. Average white band copies, Steely Dan, and they just sit there and clap, and that was it. And this band was saying, look, you're just sitting there doing nothing really, not getting into the music, you know, sort of, what do you think of what we're doing? You know, like, they were insulting the audience, and they were playing versions of, like, the Who's Substitute as bad as they could possibly play it. And people were getting up, walking out, there was sort of people booing and everything. Because these people in the pubs at the time, you know, they were 25 or older. There was no young kids around. But they brought along a couple of young kids with them, and they were saying, look, you know, form your own band. You don't have to be great just to play, you know, just get a guitar, learn 3 chords, you know. We want to see loads of bands like us. Next week, they managed to play back there again, and there was about 10 young kids had come along, and they started to dress a bit like, because the Sex Pistols clothes at the time were just ripped jackets with safety pins in to say that, yeah, we haven't got any money for flash clothes and all that. You know, we just adorn ourselves with safety pins and chains and slogans and things so that we look different, so that people actually, you know, they could incite some sort of response from the people. And of course, yeah, once you start getting into the songs, the titles of the songs and the lyrics that we're singing about, anarchy and pretty vacant.
Yes, I would say, I mean, the Pistols did make a lot of political statements, and they did advocate anarchy and so on. Did they in fact, I mean, they did in fact reflect emotional feelings that many people had at the time. Would you say, looking back now, that the way young people and the Pistols were expressing themselves was justified, or was it a waste of time?
Well, it was justified in as much as at the end of the day, if the whole punk movement just made people more aware of their situation and they would think more about, you know, what am I doing, you know, can I get a job, you know, I can be creative through music, I have got something to say, they had a chance to say it through the punk movement, it was valid. Obviously, the media sort of covered the wrong aspects of some of the punk movement. Some people misinterpreted it. It also gave some people a license just to go about, you know, being outrageous just for the sake of it. And, you know, it did go a bit sour, I felt, personally, you know, halfway through the sort of the punk thing. But
because a lot of bands jumped on the bandwagon, didn't they? I mean, the Pistols did make a point, and everybody else just joined in.
That's, well, yeah, I mean, I suppose the respectable face of punk bands like Elvis Costello and Ian Dury and that, I mean, they were the most successful because they were the most palatable. You know, I felt that bands were coming along, changing their image from, say, you know, a regular rock band into the punk thing, changing the way they dressed, changing their music because it was good business at the time, you know.
How easy, this is one that we haven't talked about, how easy was it working with them in the studio? Was Johnny Rotten difficult? I mean, you know.
Well, when I started working with them in the studio, I had my own studio, this is before we had any record contract. A lot of people were saying the band couldn't play. I mean, I suppose it depends on which night you saw them. Some nights they were excellent, some nights they were atrocious. But what we needed was some good demos that would capture all the energy they had, that you could hear, you know, because Steve's a guitarist, I mean, a great guitarist he turned out to be, very energetic, great sound. We needed to get that all on tape, and they'd never been in the studio before. And I, from working with them live, I realised what they were capable of, the energy, the pure energy they had. I knew they could get that, but the problem seemed to be that when they were in a studio, they'd sort of dry up a bit. So we spent weeks and weeks just going over the songs, so we got a really good dynamite backing track, and I suggested we could do a few overdubs here, and Steve, what's an overdub, you know, and like, this is how their sound developed. We went for the loud snare drum sound, the reverb, and just to get the vocals so, you know, it sounded like he really meant it. So once they started getting into it, they were great to work with, you know. I hear in the later days when the band had actually broke up, but they still had some recording commitments, they would go in one at a time and they didn't feel like going to the studio, and that's something else. But yeah, I mean, I found they were great to work with.
That came after. There were some funny experiences you were telling me about as well. You saw some UFOs one night or something.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's a lot of weird things seem to surround my life, but it was this one night coming back from Nottingham, I think, on the motorway. I was asleep in the van, actually, and they saw these flashing lights on the side of the motorway, sort of red flashing lights. Thanks, Bernie. And they tried to wake me up, and apparently they couldn't, which seems quite strange, but they kept observing these lights, and they followed them for about 6 miles. You know, the lights didn't disappear. They were trying to work out how close they were, and they started flashing, and they said, well, maybe it's some electric pylons come down or something, or a train on the tracks. But they were sort of hovering above the ground, and they still couldn't wake me up because they knew I would be really interested to see this, you know. And then they started giving off these red glowing things, these sort of blue flashes, like two lines would go above one and then a sort of a V shape, I think, above the other. And they completely freaked out at this. And then suddenly, one by one, they just zoomed off at incredible speed over the van and sort of did a loop and just disappeared. And then they woke me up and they said, you know, why couldn't we wake you up? We've just seen these flying saucers. And I thought, oh, they're just winding me up. But knowing them, and my other friend was there, Kim, who was the other roadie at the time, very close friends. I mean, he actually swore that, you know, that they actually saw this. I just wondered if it was a mass hallucination we all had through being tired or whatever, you know. But that was a weird one, and we've never forgotten it. Every time we meet up again, we talk about this night. Yeah,
great. So, I mean, there was a lot of fun involved in punk at the time. It wasn't just a question of making a lot of noise and shocking people. You enjoyed yourselves.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. There was always this element of humour in what the Sex Pistols did. You know, I suppose Malcolm had a big influence on his band, on the Sex Pistols, and he has got a sense of humour, and the band had a sense of humour, and they just tried to keep that in their music. It was essential, really. Otherwise, you know, it could be boring, I suppose, some of the things they were doing.
Right, we'll have some more from David Goodman in a moment.
Radio Jackie, Southwest London, close enough to care.
Hello, and Crawl to Be Kind. You're with Jackie on 227 and 1323 kilohertz. It's nearly 23 minutes after two. My special guest this afternoon is David Goodman, the first producer of the Sex Pistols. We were talking about the Pistols. David, what happened after the Pistols? Did you stay with Johnny Rotten and Public Image? Or?
No, I didn't actually. I stopped working with them just prior to their American tour. It occurred to me that it was an excellent time to help a lot of these punk bands out who at the time couldn't get their records released on the major labels. The major labels did draw a blank against punk in the early days. So me and a friend, we set up a record label. It's called The Label. And we searched around and found a few punk bands that we thought were interesting to work with. Eater was one of them. And we started getting the records out. I mean, we were selling records like hotcakes in them days, because where else could you get them from? There was just us, Stiff, I can't remember who else. There was just a handful of labels. I mean, now, how many are there, right? But I was asked, you know, well, do you want to carry on working with us? Because, you know, otherwise we've got to find another sound guy, and you seem to know your stuff and that. And I had to, it's a hard decision to make, but no, I wanted to get involved on a larger scale with the record label. That's what I did, you know. I mean, we still kept contact, and also once we had the label going, I was brought back in to mix a lot of old archived stuff that was laying around, and you know, to get the Swindle album put together and that. Yeah,
right. You're now involved with a band called Musical Memes. Mm. Now, there's a good explanation for that name, isn't there?
Yeah, it's memes.
Memes.
It's a very new word. I don't think you'll find it in the Oxford Dictionary this year. But it's a term that was thought up by some psychologists to explain... let me start again. A meme, as opposed to a gene. Now, the gene is what transfers the physical makeup of our bodies through evolution. And a meme is more the mental makeup, our personalities. You could say it is a seed of thought. For instance, if I had an original idea, came to me for a dream, which they do quite often to everybody, or just I've read some books and I've taken other people's ideas and churned it over in my subconscious, and I come up with an idea and I pass it on to you, Bernie, say, yeah? And you might either reject it as being something incompatible to the way you think or irrelevant, or you might turn it over as something worth thinking about. And you meet someone else down the pub who says to you, look, I've just thought this, you know, I just conceived this idea. And you think, oh yeah, that's quite interesting. Now, the way the subconscious would work, like a computer, I suppose, is recognize it could take these two new ideas, and with all the other information in your the total content of your mind, create your own original idea, which you will pass on to someone, or you might write a book and someone will read it, or you might write a song incorporating that idea and someone will hear it. And this is what's going on. This is a fantastic thing about evolution, is that we are progressing, although sometimes it doesn't seem like it, but we are. So I personally believe that music is a great medium to transfer ideas or thought-provoking ideas, and this is what the band is about. It's something I've always been into for a long, long time, because I'm a child of the 60s, you know, the through the hippie peace and love era, which was great at the time, and I believe we're heading into a similar era now. I just hope it's going to be more straight to the point, more progressive in a way, as where I felt the 60s, you know, it's a bit like you know, drop out of society and sort of wow, you know, sort of man. But this needs action, and this is what the punk thing was about action. But this, I feel, should be about positive action, and this is what our music, musical memes, I suppose it means music that has lyrics that are seeds of thoughts, and we try to make the music very beautiful, very relaxing to listen to, hoping that if people listen to the music, they're drawn to the music, and some of that lyrics might go into their subconscious.
Right, we'll be hearing something from Musical Means a little bit later, but you were telling me the other day that you were in hospital, and you woke up after an anaesthetic or something, and you were reviving plants, dead plants.
Yeah, this, as I was saying earlier, strange things have happened in my life. Yeah, 4 years ago now, nearly 4 years ago, I had this lump appeared in my throat, and no one could really diagnose exactly what it was. I personally thought it might be cancer of the throat or something like that, and the only way they could find out what it was to get inside. So I'd sort of booked myself in for an operation, and quite honestly, I thought, well, you know, if I survive this one, I'm going to be a very lucky man. And I did. Now, the interesting things was, one, I had a total blood transfusion, and the other one, I was out on the operating table for 5.5 hours, which apparently is quite a long time. It was a big, it's a sort of a parasite thing which was growing inside my body, and it was growing towards my brain and down towards my lungs. If they'd left it in any longer, apparently they said I could have died. Now, when I came round from the operation, I felt, one, fantastic to be alive, and I couldn't sleep for literally 2 weeks. I had so much energy. I felt so positive, as if I'd realised for the first time my true potential. As you say, I mean, this thing, there was these dead plants in the hospital which had been thrown away, I mean, shriveled up little things, and everyone said, it's dead, throw it away. And something drew me to it. So the plant was saying, look, I just need a little bit of water now, and a little bit of, and I stuck them on the end of the bed. Lo and behold, they came back to life. I left them with some nice old chap in there, and they died literally sort of days after I left. Carrying on from that, I went straight to the studio. I recorded loads of songs. I conceived a sort of a religion, if you like, which is a non-religion, but all sorts of strange things happened to me. Unfortunately, it's sort of mellowed out a bit now. It's worn off a bit, but I still remember that, and I still have some of that energy I found from that experience.
It's incredible. Right, some more in a moment. Est, if you've just joined us, is David Goodman, the first producer of the Sex Pistols, a very controversial producer indeed, and we've been talking about the band he's involved with right now, Musical Memes. David, is there a certain sound you're trying to create with the band?
Well, basically, we're interested in acoustic instruments, blending them with electronic instruments, new technology instruments. Some of the instruments we use are Eastern instruments. We use sitar, sarangi, alto harps, mandolins. We've got a whole collection of them. We try to pick them up and get some noise out of them. And also we are against, at the moment, using drum machines, you know, the rigid sort of click-click of the drum machine. We use more Moroccan percussion and tablas, because from that we find it's the only way to get a natural feel to the music. I mean, if you try to imagine your favourite classical piece played to a drum machine, it would just sound too military. It would sound wrong. That's why you have a conductor there who fills the music, who takes the orchestra through the natural feel. And this is what we feel is missing in a lot of modern music today, and which is what we are trying to inject back into it. Also, you know, music that can conjure up more feelings of joy or sadness or whatever the song is about.
You're obviously going into a different direction. I mean, from the Sex Pistols, I mean, we'll hear something in a moment, but from the Sex Pistols to this, it's a drastic change, I would say.
Well, it's a change that's been coming about. We've been working on this project for about 3 years now. But also, if you read the signs, what is happening in the music biz at the moment, in the music press, is there are a lot of bands similar to what we're doing, like Psychic TV, Here and Now. There's a whole host of bands that are, well, Alarm, for instance, I mean, they've got the acoustic guitars. You are seeing more acoustic instruments appearing now. And bands like OMD, who started off very much electronic music, are discovering, they're saying, well, look, we discovered these acoustic instruments. There's much more scope there. You know.
Do you think there's not enough personality in machines? Is that what you're saying, really?
Well, for disco music, I suppose it's okay. For dance music, jerky music, it's okay. Fine, I mean, they can do things that physically a drummer couldn't do or other musicians couldn't do. But the downfall of them is that they just, in a strict tempo, you know, if you try to speed them up and slow them down, at the moment they don't have that facility unless you just do it physically, which isn't, you know, unless you just move the control to make it faster or slower, which doesn't really work. You can't do that. But I think very shortly we will see on the market here in England a fantastic little machine from Japan. It's basically the computer that thinks it's an orchestra, and once you learn how to program the damn thing, you can get it to speed up and slow down naturally how an orchestra would. You basically write the music in as you would be writing music, and so you get rallentandos and diminuendos and things like that. So when this appears and people start using it, you're going to see, like, you know, one man can be a whole orchestra, and he's just got to learn how to program the damn thing. Lovely. I'm going to get one.
Good, can't wait to hear it. We're going to hear something from the band. You've brought in a couple of tapes. What's the track we shall be hearing in a moment?
Yeah, this track is called Don't Bite the Hand That Feeds You. It's written by myself. I did the music, and Andy Blade, who used to be in one of the early punk bands, Eater, he's wrote the lyrics, he's singing on there. So, yeah.
Right, we'll hear that in a moment.
Southwest London, Radio Jackie.